Ragla under his feet, so to speak, his master Vidyasambhava was like drips of crystal. Obviously, it's a metaphor and has to be understood as a metaphor, but the question is, what is the metaphor? What is the metaphor? And the Rambam explains, as he usually does. Let's go to where it says page 1. And the Rambam explains what the word feet means. It's not relevant to our discussion. Look at the very bottom of the right-hand column on this side. V'hisbonen, it's after the 22 to start. Omro kemase livnas hasape. It says it was like white, like a brick of crystal. V'ilu hoisa kavona hamare, if we were talking about what it looked like, it would say it was like a crystal brick. Hosef Masa, it says it was the same structure as a crystal. Lefisha chomer kefishadato mekabel tamid nifal mibchinas atzmuso. Ve'elo pu'ula ela b'mikre. Substances, materials, are acted upon by other forces. A stone gets chiseled, it gets painted, and so on. Kimosha tsura po'elas l'olom batzmusa if elos b'mikra kol shvasif ateva. Ulefikol makamaisa, aval. That's the important one. Livnas asape, what is a crystal brick? Hubitu ledova hashokuf. It's something which is transparent. Lo alamara lovan. Crystal or diamond or glass are not white but transparent. Kimare hasape eno mare loven. A sapphire, and again, he takes this to mean, I guess, crystal or diamond, is not white, ela shokof bulvad, it's transparent. Vashokof eno mare kefishukha besifra teva. Transparency is not a color. Lefishi lohoya gavan, were it to be a type of color, lohoya mare kolagvonim mechora venirbo. It could not possibly reflect any other color. Because a transparent body has no innate coloring, it's able to reflect any other color. This is very similar to the most primordial matter, which actually is neda kolatsuros, completely devoid of any properties. Ulefikach mekabuhu kol hatsuros chalifos, it can express any other property. Hold a second. In other words, the Rambam is saying that whenever we look at matter in the world, we can distinguish between the matter and the properties that it has. Things have color, things have shape, things have viscosity, and so on. But the primal matter is something which exists. It has, its property is that it can take on any other property. I mean, since we're so used to it, we actually, a lot of times, don't even marvel at it. But the idea of transparency is something that's really almost counterintuitive. We live with glass windows, and there's windows all around, and the yeshiva has windows all over. And for us, a window is not a marvel. But windows are a relatively late invention. That glass can be really transparent is not... It was very, 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 very expensive. In the ancient times, glass that was transparent, and it wasn't terribly transparent. So you tell somebody, you have a wall, it's matter, it's thick, and yet it will transmit any other image. We don't marvel at it enough. And the Rambam says this is indicative, or this is probably symbolizes that there is a state where matter exists, but it has no properties yet, and it's ready to express any other property. The glass, the transparent glass, will give you over color, it'll give you over shapes, it'll give you over anything in the street through that glass. So the Rambam says, and then he says, he continues, which means, he says, v'zedome lechomer harishin, yashav yichutusoy, v'hoya, v'hoysa hasagosimim came. So what they understood was hachomer harishon v'yachaso el Hashem. So the Rambam says, these people who went up to that mountain were able to understand the world at the place that it touches God. In other words, the world that we have is created world. It has its own properties. It has own colors, shapes, and properties. As it comes closer to God, it becomes less, it doesn't have any properties. All it is matter that is ready to express other properties. Just like when you bake a cake or something, you start with flour, and the flour tends to be very, very devoid of any of its own properties. All it does is it's able to give out the sweetness and the colors and everything else that you do with it. Matter was created in two stages. There's primal matter, which is devoid of any specific properties, and then there are properties that were embossed on it, that were imprinted on it, and expressed through it. That is how, and the Rambam says, the furthest, a person cannot understand God, but the furthest human mind can go to is hid on that matter. And the Rambam says, because that matter comes straight from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're going to understand that towards the end of this year, in what sense the Rambam means. It's not only science. Science, as far as it goes in itself, is not really touching on God, but in what sense does that matter bring you almost to the point of touching God? We're going to explain that at the end. There was the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, in section 128. Let's see the next one. The next one is Rabbeinu Bechaya. Rabbeinu Bechaya is a commentary on the Torah. And again, pardon me if I'm explaining something you know already, but I assume there are people that don't know. Rabbeinu Bechaya he lived in Spain. He was a student of the Rashba, and his pirush is a very comprehensive pirush on the Torah. And as usual, because it's on the lengthy side, it's not popular today. People like shorter pieces today. But he's very, very known for doing the following. He has four layers of explanations for much of the Torah. He deals with the grammatical and textual issues. He deals with Medrash, and he will usually bring in as many Medrashim as there are on something. He deals with Kabbalah topics, and he deals with philosophical topics. So he's, in a sense, very comprehensive, brings a lot of material. He's seen as being close to Ramban in thought and so on. Take a look at page 2 is his beginning. Skim down. The issue he deals with here is, how did creation take place? Was everything created in its day? In other words, on Monday the heavens were created, on Tuesday the grass and so on, or no? He says, to make things easier, skip down to where there's like a little 78. Ubara das Rav Nechemya Moshe Azeh, ki hachomer shemimena hoya hakol nivra b'yom rishon. That the material from which everything was created on the first day. In other words, all matter was there in one shot. Va'achakach, afterwards, nivra kol hanevroim b'shisha yomim mechelka chaymer. From this primal matter, in each one, there was a differentiation. Each one of the 6 days, a different part of it was created. Kol echad vechad biyomo. V'zeo shekosuv ki huomar vayehi. It says in the pasuk, he said, and then it came into being. Bier. Ki hakol hoya bahamira vavaya achas. Everything was brought into this world in one instant. V'achakein, and afterwards, Sivad var yom biyomo, each day he gave instructions, vehemid advar vatim lepol, and then brought it out into realization. In other words, the potential, everything potentially was there at the first instant. As soon as matter came into the world, everything potentially existed. And each day there was another differentiation into a different fruit, trees, animals, and so on. Similarly, if you'll skip across the page, there's a bezo there. It says, "Vaharetz ha'isu tohu vavohu." What is tohu vavohu? So, go to page number 3, which is a continuation of that page. He says, "Hachomer hazeh." This material, nikra b'loshna Torah tohu, is called tohu. Or b'loshna philosophim, in the Greek philosophy, it's called hiyuli. Ubohu, what is bohu? Hu hatsura hanilbeshes lechomer. It is the, tsura means form or distinct properties that then imprints itself on this matter. Vihi mila merkeves, bohu is two words together, bohu, kloma, dover, sheyesh bo tsura. Something that already has a form. Something that already has properties. So creation is divided into tohu, which is just substance, things. Ubohu means clearly defined properties, color, and every chemical property that different materials have. Yes?
Would this correspond and correlate to the idea of a bria, yeshmei ayin, that the bria is the lashon of tohu?
Correct. Correct. Yes, definitely so. Okay. Rabbi Singer is referring to, there are two or three terms used in Hebrew for creation, the creation process, and it's Kabbalah is used a lot, but it's a term that are used a lot. Bria means bringing something into being that didn't exist. Yetzira means giving shape and form to things that already exist. You're not creating something new, but you're stamping properties on it. And asiyah means to finish off something and so on. So correct. So Rabbi Nebuchaya reinforces in his words what the Rambam says, that creation is a two-step process. There is matter that is just existence, like putty, like clay, like flour that you bake a cake with. And then there are distinct properties imposed on them, impressed on them. Now, that's the big picture, so to speak, of the world. Let's go to the next one, which is mankind, on page 4. It's a medrash, a medrash Tanchuma is one of the famous medrashim, very, very important medrash. And it's going, Zesha Omar HaKosef, it's on the base on the right-hand side, the first paragraph there, Dova Acha V'yodo Zachar, Zesha HaKosef Ein Kodosh Kashem Kei Biltecha. It says that Shmuel's mother, Hannah, when she had Shmuel, she said an extraordinarily moving Shira about what it means to become a mother for someone who didn't have children. And she praised God and she said, Ein Kadosh Kashem, there's no one as holy as God, Ein Biltecha. It says, Ve'ein Tzur Kelokeinu, literally means there is no rock, fortress, strength like God. But the Medrash gives it a different understanding. Let's skip down to the third line in that paragraph. Ve'ein Tzur Kelokeinu. There is nobody who is a tsur, which again, the literal meaning of tsur means rock, strength, and so on. Ein tsayer kelokeinu. There is no artist like God. The word tsur is very similar to tsayer. It's same consonants. Keitza. What does it mean there is no artist like God? In what sense? Melech basav adam, a king, tsur tsura ala kosel, can draw on a stone wall, a fresco, and so on. Shema yochel lotzur ala mayim, can he draw a picture on water? Akadosh Baruch Hu tzar es ha'uba b'mei imo, God draws the fetus in its mother's womb, betoch hamayim, on water. Havi oma, which means ve'ein tsayer kelekenu, there is no artist like God. Let's try to understand that. The Medrash, I just heard Rabbi Weiner, as I was walking in, was appropriately mentioning this point, that halachically, a fetus until a certain stage is called maya bauma, water. In other words, it's a state that we cannot distinguish specific features. And I'm not sure exactly what it corresponds to. I'm sure somebody probably speaks about medically what that 40-day stage corresponds to. But it means you basically start with a mass that has no properties of its own. When you paint, the medium that you're using and that you're painting on is very much part of the painting. You can paint on a canvas, and that's one type of painting. You can paint in a book. You can do a fresco. You can carve a monument. That's very much because the material you're working with has the ability to impress on it. It can carry a picture. That's the type of picture it carries. On water, water is something that it's so nebulous, it doesn't carry. Just like you can't paint on a gas because it'll just dissipate. You know, you can have an airplane make some letters, but that's it. If you paint on water, it's not a very long-lasting painting. It dissipates very rapidly. So the inability to put structure on something that does not have any structure is the frustration of painting on water. But that God can impose a human body on something which is water, basically, that's the wonder of God. So Chazal are telling us here that human creation parallels global creation in the sense it starts with water and God impresses image and form onto water. As an aside, I want to say just, I once heard a word on this. It's so beautiful. I want to repeat it. It's got really not, it's on this Chazal, but I've heard it in a very beautiful context, and I think just worth sharing as an aside. This I once heard, somebody went to be Menachem Avil, somebody went to comfort a mourner of somebody who lost somebody very young. And he said over from Panovich Rav a very beautiful thought about this Medrash. He said the following. It says that, a good painter, I guess in the days when paintings were real and realistic, the image looks very much like the person you're painting. There was a very famous painter in Israel, like 100 years ago, who used to do in shuls paintings. They were so lifelike that he painted in Meir Sharon Shul a Sfarim shelf, like you know, on the wall. He did a fresco of the shelf of Sfarim, and people were forever going over trying to pull out a sefer. That's how alive was. He says, God makes paintings, and the paintings themselves think that they're full of life. That was the way, the figurines. He said, God puts figurines into the world that are so lifelike that they themselves think they're alive. It was very, very beautiful, and I wanted to share it because it's a beautiful thought on its own. It's not relevant. What is relevant is the Medrash is making it very clear that human creation parallels that process. There is water, and God can impose structure and order on the water. Let's go to the next Rabbeinu Bechaya again on page 5, who uses a different medrash to impose to tell us the same thing in different words. Afa min Adama, it says man was created earth from the Adama. Now I imposed too much a structure on that, on this substance, so you don't actually see it very well, but it's quoting a Gemara here. The Gemara is a very strange Gemara. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin that man, God created man Friday. The first hour he lumped together earth. He put down earth. The second hour he mixed it with water. Gimel, the third hour, Rakmai, he put limbs into it. The fourth one, he infused a soul into it. On the fifth hour, man stood. On the sixth hour, he called other animals by names. The seventh hour, he got married. The eighth hour, they gave birth, and so on. So the Gemara is telling you something about the substructure of man and his creation. And let's take a look on page 6, which is the second other side of this. The Rabbi Rebbechai explains the different stages of it. The first one, he says, that these steps are parallel to the days of creation. What happened in the first hour of man's creation is parallel to what happened the first day. The second hour is parallel to the second day. The third hour is parallel to the third day. So he says, the first hour is like Yehi Or, there shall be light, which is not what we want to talk about. So that's not hour. The second one is Shenosan Gvula Ofa HaNitzbar. He mapped out roughly Be'ezemok Mi'arosh or Raglov, where the head or feet will be. In other words, the top-bottom alignment, just like the second day there was heaven and earth, which gives you the alignment of what's up and down, what's spiritual, what's material, what's good, what's not so good. Man gave the alignment, or the general alignment. The third, Shenosan Votsir Evarim, he put the form of limbs on a person, Vinizgalo Evarim, and that's when the limbs appeared, Kineged Yom Shlishi Shenizgalo Ha'aretz Vinitz Taira. That's when the earth first became mapped out, like it says, V'tiroa Yabasha. I want to add one more point that he's not saying here. The word used in the Torah for having earth appear is yikavu hamayim. The waters shall become gathered. The truth is the word yikavu doesn't mean, it does mean like a mikveh means a gathering of water, but the root in Hebrew is kav, a line, and the way it should be translated perfectly is there shall be delineated the earth in the oceans. The earth was there, but the ocean covered it. There was, when the ocean covers something, you lose all delineation. I mean, God forbid, like when the tsunami came, I mean, a place that was completely swept aside, there was no more sense of what had been, where had been, no lines, nothing. So the form which delineated and said, mountain, island, peninsula, lowlands, all of that happened in the third day. Yikavu hamayim, the waters had a lines imposed on them. That delineated, like it says, gvul samta b'yavorun. God made a boundary and the waters could not go past it. That's really the creation of the third day. And therefore, the third hour was, man was a mass. And then God said, hand, foot, liver, heart, and not only the shape and the form, but the properties. A liver does what a liver does, a kidney does what a kidney does, and so on and so forth. So the Rabbi Nebuchaya is really just explaining the germ of the idea that the Tanchuma has given us about man being a picture on water, so to speak. He's explaining it in a lot more detail in this Chazal over here about the form of the Evarim coming into light. That is man. So we have here a parallel structure of the universe and man, side by side. A third element. Let's take a look on page 7. Page 7 is from the introduction of the Ramban on the Torah. And the Ramban in the Torah is the, after Rashi, it's the commentary. It's the primary commentary. It's a very, very important commentary. And in this introduction is very famous. This line over here that we're going to read is also quite famous, but people don't really quite understand the implications of what he's saying. Take a look, it's like a little 90 over there. Od yesh b'yadeinu kabbalah shel emes. He explains about the Torah and its roots and so on. He says, we also have a true tradition. Ki kol ha-Torah kulo shmos of Shakarish Baruch Hu. All of Torah is full with the names of God. Shehatevos mischalkos l'shemos be'inyan acher. Because the letters, the words can be split up, the letters can be split up in different ways. Ki'ilu tachshov al derech mashal, for instance, ki pasuk breishis yischalek l'tevos acheros. You could possibly mix and read the words differently. Kegon, barosh yisbarei elokim. In other words, the letters take on different combinations. And people just look at it as codes of sorts, I guess, and the way you can differently structure Torah. That's not the point of it. And let's explain. One of the things that makes it difficult to find a Balkriya on Shabbos, and why you have to pay a Balkriya to come, is that the Torah has no vowels, no trup, nothing to help you read it. And when people are inexperienced in reading, they really make some truly phenomenal mistakes. You can actually hear, you know, things that are really funny because it's run on. We think that it's kind of limitation, but that's not true. It's the greatness of Torah. The letters as they stand is primary matter, so to speak, from which a lot of different meanings can be cut. The vowels, the trup, which is really punctuation, is form that you're imposing on that Torah. And we have a tradition, a Torah Shebaal Peh Mesorah, on what's the primary way to read it. And if somebody uses a different combination as a primary way of reading it, he's wrong, he's Megala Panim Torah Shel Kaloch, he's not Bikoris, but it may be used as an additional way of reading it. And therefore, it means that the Torah itself is primary matter in a certain sense. We've got one tradition as to impose tzura on it, but there may be other traditions, or not other traditions, but there may be other readings that will give us also truths. Not there may be, but there are other readings. Again, as an aside, I'll just take a very interesting word I just remembered. The Radzina says, the Ishbitzer says, that it says that in the future we will be able to eat from the fruit of knowledge. And he asks, this Torah is not allowed to be changed. We know that the Torah will never change. How could that become permitted to eat? And like all these medrashim about in the future Mashiach, very hard a lot of times to know what's metaphor, what's kipshuto. But I'd like to give an explanation So the Radzina says the following explanation. It says in the Torah, you shall eat from all trees in the garden, except for the tree of knowledge of good and bad, you shall not eat. That's the way we read in the Torah, and that's the correct reading. You're not allowed to eat from that tree. You are not allowed to eat from it. It says, when Mashiach comes, there'll be another set of trup, of Tamei Mikra. And we will read it as follows. You can eat from all trees in the garden and from the tree of knowledge of good. Semicolon. And bad you shall not eat. In other words, we will pass the words. There will be a trap there, an asnachta. So it's the same Torah, but we were able to see. Today, the true reading is you can't eat from the tree that has good and bad mixed because it's a mixture. And we're not smart enough and competent enough to divine the good from the bad. But in the future, the Torah will stand, but the same words will give us another meaning. That's just sort of an illustration of how you can get another form stamped onto the same set of words. That's the third element. There's a fourth element, which I couldn't find the safer to photocopy, so we'll have to just do it out loud. It's a small one, a simple one. The Ramchal, who wrote the Mesillas Yesharim, Lutzato, has a book called Derech Hashem. It's a very pithy and very important work, which I know that somebody has studied. And he says the following. He makes the following point about generations of humanity, of mankind. He says that Adam HaRishon was supposed to be mankind, complete, total mankind, Jew, Gentile, there was no distinction between Jew, Gentile, or anything. Adam was man. After he sinned, it became necessary to bring out into this world a nation that will be specifically focused on finding the truth and carrying on this message, and other people will gain from them. So he says there was a waiting period when many nations could have become that. Once Abraham became what he was and who he was, it froze. The same way that priesthood in Klaisol froze at a certain time. It says, different Chazal, why was it that Aaron merited to be a priest? Why was it Moses merited to be Levites? There was a period of time when it was not fixed or frozen who would be chosen to be Jewish, who would be chosen to be a priest, who would be chosen to be a Levite. And then at a certain point it became frozen. So in mankind as a whole, you have that same parallel structure of a time of undifferentiation, and then a point past which it's everything is in its own category, its own class, and with its own properties. So we have four parallel, I would call them creations or aspects of creation that follow the same pattern. You have the world universally has the tohu and bohu. It has the matter and the form stamped onto it. You find man is defined as the waters with something stamped on it. You find the Torah and you find Israel amongst the nations, priests amongst Israelites and so on. I want to try to understand, I don't know if the purpose of it is the right word for it, but what that tells us. What do we see from it? Sitting back, what is it that we should see from something like that? And now I'd like to use an idea that the Maral brings. It's a kind of difficult idea, it's not a simple idea, and try to explain it as best as I can. The Maral is bothered by a question that is something that kind of plagues him in a few places. And it must have been a question that philosophy raised in his times. And you see from the way he deals with it that he feels it's a very crucial question. The question is as follows. If the core of our belief is God's absolute unity, how can we have a world as diverse as it is? One of the puzzles that led people to understand genetics was, how can you have two redheaded parents with a child who's black hair? You can't cut from cold, you can't cut gold. You know, everything is what it is. So if you have a mixture, if you have ore, and you take out gold from it, and stone from it, and magnesium from it, we know it's thought as a mixture. But if we say God is total, and he's one, God is all good, whatever it is, we relate to God as perfect unity. So how is it that we have diversity in the world? And diversity means good, bad, indifferent, every aspect, male, female, animal kind, plant kind, humankind, everything in the world that is so different, how from unity comes diversity? My son was told, I guess this is a kind of a Yeshiva Bachas joke. My son left the yeshiva where the boys are known to be on the sharp-witted side. And they said that they raised a question. One of their friends got married. He was black-haired. His wife was black-haired. And their child was red-headed. So how could that be? And they said, this is absolute proof that God must be redheaded, because it says every child has three partners, a father, mother, and God. So it must be absolute proof perfect that Hashem is redheaded. It's a Yeshiva Bachas type of humor. But at any rate, it was one of the most difficult issues. From where does diversity come? If we don't describe God in any way but unified, where does diversity come? So the Maral says the following point, and again, it's not a direct answer, but he says God created one matter, so to speak, one thing, and the thing within itself is diverse. I don't want to go into the more complicated philosophical part of it, but I want to try to bring it down to a point that's sensible to us. What he means is everything in the world, you will distinguish its commonality and its its differences together. Every human being is made out of protoplasm. And every living being is made out of protoplasm. And yet, it's so different. When I have two people, where I get the tremendous sense of awe of creation is, there's obviously one father and obviously so much difference. Everything in the world is created from similar electrons. And I remember as a kid, I used to puzzle it. Well, you know, every element has different properties. But if they all come from electrons, where does the different properties come from? It is one of the basic riddles of physics. Maybe Rabbi Singer has some explanations for it. But as a rabbi or as a physicist, one of the two. But at any rate, it's one of the real riddles. But the what it does, what a person sees is the wonder of creation together with the unity of God in that, when he takes the entire scope of it, the world contains matter which is one. There is one matter, there is the tohu that is encompasses everything in the world, and there's the bohu that's impressed on it, and that's distinct. So in this process, we're able to divine two stages. We're able to divine one matter that takes around the world, and that expresses the fact that there was one creator and one God and the unity of it. And the tremendous feat of creation is that within that one matter, there's that differentiation. And I think that when you deal with stem cells, the discovery of stem cells really brings it home. When you look at a human body and it's one person, and every single cell really has genes for everything, and at the stage after differentiation, there's no way a liver is going to become a heart. Even though it's the same exact, it comes from the same place, and it's the same cell with the same complements, it's gone. And yet, at the elementary stage, they were all the same. So, yes, there are halachic issues, tremendous opportunities for health and so on, and that's definitely. But when you marvel at God's handiwork, Magadlu Maaseh Hashem, I think there's a special angle when you're dealing with this, when you're holding that stem cell in your hand, so to speak, there's a special element of marveling that you're seeing live. This process that we saw is really intrinsic to creation. You see that at one stage, the unity of everything expresses itself. And the same cell can be a liver cell, can become a bone cell, can become a brain cell. And once that certain line has been passed of bohu, it's no longer true. That, I think, is like Arcadia says, when we see science and understand new discoveries, I think every time there's a new marvel at the handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the marvel of this takes us to Tohu Vavohu. It takes us to the wonder of Torah, that you have one document which expresses so many different truths, so many different angles to it, can be passed in so many ways. It expresses the wonder of mankind, that he starts as one unit and then becomes so many different subdivisions. And Klal Yisrael, all of mankind is one group. Mankind has a commonness to everybody, and then it has a specific function for everybody. It's the tribes in Klal Yisrael, it's Israel among the nations, and it's men in the world as a whole. Thank you for this call.
And then we'll have the chavrusas and the women's symposium.